Der Rasenfunk. Kurzpass. Was ist eigentlich los beim FC Liverpool? Diese Frage kann man mit deutschen Journalisten klären. Man kann aber auch mal die Experten vom FC Liverpool fragen. Und die habe ich mir jetzt eingeladen. Die Anfield Raps sind hier im Rasenfunk. Kurzpass. Ja, hallo und herzlich willkommen. Liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer, das hier ist mal wieder eine Folge im Rahmen des Junior Cups. Das heißt, wie schon letztes Jahr erfolgt hier der Hinweis, ich bin hier beruflich. Das heißt, nicht in Rasenfunkmission. Ihr könnt diese Folge natürlich trotzdem hören. Ihr könnt sie besonders kritisch hören, ob ich vielleicht diesem Turnier besonders positiv gegenüberstehe, weil es eben Teil meines Jobs hier ist. Aber ich glaube, diese Folge ist es sehr wert, gehört zu werden, denn ich habe zwei hervorragende Gäste, für die ich ins Englische switchen muss, auch wenn uns das jetzt allen ein bisschen wehtun wird. Ich möchte mich hiermit schon mal bei euch entschuldigen, liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer. So, I'm gonna switch to English right now to introduce you guys. The Anfield Rap is here right in Sindelfingen at the Junior Cup. I present to you Josh Sexton. Hello, Josh.
Hello. How's it going?
Very, very well, as you know. And Craig Hannon. Hello,
hello,
Craig.
Wie geht's?
Oh, very nice. I want to answer with Kartoffelsalat. Kind of an inside joke. These are the best ones that nobody gets, but the one that made them. Would you please, Josh, just start with explain to my listeners what is the Anfield Rap?
The Anfield Rap is a Liverpool podcast based in Liverpool City Centre, which mainly shares experience with other fans from all over the world, really. We've got fans from as far out as Australia and fans in the city of Liverpool, and our aim is to share the match-going experience with them. So we go to Liverpool games home and away, and have done since 2011, making podcasts, previews, reviews, and analysing every single game. And then we have a couple of jokes in between and have a bit of a laugh with it, so we like to think.
So you're much more than only a podcast, Craig.
What are you? Yeah, so we did begin as a podcast in 2011. We now create video content as well. We do live events all around the world, so we'll do live podcasts. We've done those in Norway, all around Scandinavia, in America, in Australia, in Ireland, in the UK, all over the world. And yeah, we sell t-shirts as well. Which is
crazy.
Diversification. So we do a lot of things, but mainly the Anfield Rap is about sharing the experience of being a Liverpool fan through podcasts and through video.
Yeah, and you are huge. You are too humble to acknowledge it, but you are huge. You have a very big crowd of Liverpool fans that are listening to you. And the reason I wanted to talk to you, in a way, we are repeating our talk we had yesterday.
Which one?
Let's pretend one, that didn't happen.
The one with the bar, with the beer in our hand. We talked so good about Liverpool, about Jürgen Klopp, what has changed at your club, and what is to be expected from the Champions League match against FC Bayern Munich, which I am really looking forward to, as you know. So that I said, okay, we have to repeat this exact conversation again, and I will record it. And as always, this will work out fine. So Josh, explain us, what has happened since Jürgen Klopp arrived at Liverpool?
Well, I think that it sort of starts before Jürgen Klopp arrived at Liverpool, really, was that the managers and players that had come before, and the owners in particular that come before, the current owners now, there was a massive distance created between almost the club and the fans, and the fans are obviously, especially in Germany, the fans are such a big part of the club, but in England it felt like Liverpool were almost being written out of this thing, and they were so far away from the playing staff who almost became these prima donnas who just signed for Liverpool, and it was like a conveyor belt of players that went in and out. And when Jürgen Klopp came in, it was like a fresh new perspective on everything, where for him he was buying players that he knew he could trust, and then that meant that we could trust them as well. We could trust them to do the business on the pitch, but we also knew that they were good people that we could rely on, and people that knew cared about us. And I think that's probably something that didn't exist at Liverpool in the past, was that there wasn't that trust between the players and fans. So Klopp really brought that bond close together, and he always worked since the start. I remember the words in his first press conference, which are sort of ever used from Liverpool fans and probably even further afield now, is that he wanted to turn doubters into believers at Liverpool. Yeah. And I think at the time there were a lot of doubters, and I think now you're finally starting to see the results of Klopp's progress, that we are becoming believers.
Okay, but when you say it started before Klopp with the owners. Who are the owners, Craig, and what did they do to create this gap between the fans and the ownership and the club?
I think Liverpool have had a few problems with owners before their current owners. The Anfield rap was born out of that, was born out of the fact that in 2000 and between 2008 and 2011, Liverpool were owned by two Americans who had somehow managed to acquire a football club as big as Liverpool with absolutely no money. And so they were taking money from the club.
They were kind of modern Houdinis.
Exactly.
How did they manage to do that?
I have no idea. I think back in those days, there wasn't the same kind of screening process that there is now with new owners coming in.
Yeah.
And so they'd managed to get themselves in a position where they owned the club. They made promises to the fans that they would sign big players. They would build a new stadium immediately. And none of these things happened. They sack Rafa Benitez. They bring in Roy Hodgson, who will go down as one of the worst managers ever. Well, if not the worst manager to ever manage Liverpool Football Club. They had no money to spend. The transfer strategy was terrible. The people at the top of the club didn't care about the club. They didn't know about the club. They were businessmen, and they certainly weren't Liverpool supporters. And so, Liverpool almost went into liquidation because of these owners, and they were kind of saved in some way by the current owners, FSG, who came in, bought the club, when really, they probably were businessmen as well who saw an opportunity to buy a club as big as Liverpool for a cheap price.
Okay.
And make them big. And, you know, as businessmen, that's been a brilliant business decision by them. But it's also, they've also been able to take Liverpool to a new level without really spending mass amounts of their own money. We definitely haven't been bankrolled in the way that Man City or Chelsea have. We've almost organically built ourselves to this position now where, you know, the clubs run brilliantly as a business. It's, you know, they're closer to fans than they ever were. And we look across at Germany and we see this, and we see, you know, the impact that fans can have in this country, and that we look at that with envy a little bit. And, you know, we're getting closer to that, that the owners are working with that. And then we've got a team on the pitch who are one of the best, if not the best Liverpool side I've seen in my lifetime. And I'm 27 years old, headed by a manager who has transformed the whole club from top to bottom, and who we fully trust.
Yeah. Okay, I want to start to go back furthermore, because my question is, when did it start that Liverpool was sold to an owner, and how can you get rid of a bad owner? I mean, you had some stages of grief, I would say, with ownership. How did it all begin, Josh?
So I think sort of a little bit before my sort of Liverpool supporting life, but I believe that David Moores was the owner before Hicks and Gillette. So he was a local businessman. He'd owned the club for many years, and I suppose he was almost sold this dream of what Hicks and Gillette, who are these two American cowboys, as Craig neglected to call them, two Americans who rode into town full of promises and with very little actually in their pockets, and they just created a sort of whole host of problems at the club, and Liverpool, as we sort of explained to you yesterday, Max, is a city which is a very activist city. It's a city that really fights injustice at the core, and from the start it felt like Hicks and Gillette were intent to almost go head to head with everybody who loved the club. That includes Rafa Benitez, includes all the supporters. So when you say, how do we get rid of bad owners? Well, there were all sorts of protests throughout the whole years against them. Even while Rafa Benitez was there, when Rafa Benitez got sacked, it just ramped up even more, because Rafa almost became the spokesperson for Liverpool supporters, in that he uses press conferences to publicly come out against the owners and say that he wasn't being given the money that had been promised, and that all these promises that they come into town with had been completely broken, and that Liverpool fans were not going to see these rewards. And Rafa did such a good job during his time at Liverpool of sort of making the most out of a squad which he almost had to. He had to just fund himself. We sold loads of huge players for not so much money when you look back on it, and the money was then, even the little amounts of money that we sold these players for were not reinvested into the playing squad. So the sort of activist mind state of Liverpool supporters meant the protests sort of went on and on until the point where Craig mentions where liquidation and administration became a possibility for Liverpool, and then from there their position was completely untenable, and that was when Fenway Sports Group came in.
Okay, and who are those guys, FSG Fenway Sports Group?
So they own the Boston Red Sox, and there's a great movie actually about the Boston Red Sox and their business model called Moneyball, whereby they got rid of players on big wages who weren't performing anymore, and they brought in younger players with who had the possibility of being sold for a higher price. And FSG tried that at Liverpool to begin with. They bought young English youngsters for high prices but small wages, and it didn't quite work out for them. And I think that's probably because they came from America. They didn't know much about football in general and how that works, and how, you know, if you pay a certain amount for a football player, it doesn't mean that you're going to get that.
you know
what I mean? And so they were paying big money for some players, and it didn't work out. And that problem continued throughout Kenny Dalglish, throughout Brendan Rodgers' reign. And it was really only when Jurgen Klopp took over at the club that he began to work closely with a guy called Michael Edwards, and together they've managed to transform Liverpool's transfer strategy. So it feels like every single signing that they've made has been a success, apart from Loris Karius, of course. But when you look at the players that we've signed, Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, and beyond that, Virgil van Dijk, some of those players are for massive amounts of money. Virgil van Dijk, Alisson, one of the most expensive goalkeepers in the world, the most expensive defender in the world. But they've also signed some hidden gems. Andy Robertson at left back, who is probably the Premier League's best left back at the moment. He was signed from Hull, who had just been relegated. So they've been astute in everything that they've done, and there seems to be a plan now within Liverpool and Liverpool's transfer process. But at the beginning of FSG's reign, that wasn't always the case. We signed Charlie Adam. we signed Andy Carroll for 35 million.
Yeah, I remember.
After we'd sold Fernando Torres. They do get some things right, Luis Suarez. But then there was just, for every Luis Suarez, there were five Andy Carrolls, and that was the problem of Liverpool.
So, and what is now the role of Jurgen Klopp and what of Michael Edwards, is it right? How do they split the tasks?
So I think before Klopp came in, there was a bit of a committee, which Rodgers was a very minimal part of. And I think that was always part of his issue at Liverpool, is he always felt like he was fighting for control. And I think Michael Edwards was a small part of that, albeit I think it was more on the sort of data side of things. So when Klopp came in, Edwards was moved across to sporting director, which is obviously a very similar model to what you'll see in Germany quite frequently. But he's mainly now the person who will build up the packages of information on players, and he'll take them to Klopp, and then him and Klopp will have
an open
discussion. Yeah. So it won't just be like, oh, Michael Edwards sits down and says, Jurgen, I think we should sign this player, and then Jurgen goes yes or no. I imagine it'll be what strengths can he bring to us? How does he do this well? Does he do that well? And then they sort of make the decision from there. And like Craig said, we've benefited from it so much so far, because there's players who've come in who have just completely hit the ground running. And we were talking to someone from Austria before, me and Craig, about Sadio Mane, because obviously he played for Salzburg over there. And I think in Austria, the opinion was that he probably wouldn't be able to go on and make it a big club. And it's probably quite a shock to them that he went on to play for Liverpool. And at the time when we signed him, there weren't many Liverpool fans who were very excited about him either. But that first season is still remains probably his best season at the club, his most effective season at the club, alongside Philip Coutinho and Roberto Firmino. So this, it's become just a much more aligned way of thinking now, and I think that's reflected throughout the club, and it is a massive influence of what Jurgen Klopp has brought him.
It's definitely a trend at Liverpool during Jurgen Klopp's time there that Jurgen Klopp has signed players that Liverpool fans weren't sure about. So I remember Liverpool get beat in the Europa League final, and in the build-up to that final, the news was in England that Liverpool were going to sign Mario Götze, and Liverpool fans were so excited because this would be a big signing, but they, because they didn't win the Europa League, they didn't reach the Champions League, and so Mario Götze didn't want to sign for Liverpool because he wanted Champions League football, and so Liverpool signed Sadio Mane, and the fan base. It's another player from Southampton, and it's a player that felt a little bit underwhelming at the time, but he turned out to be a brilliant player for Liverpool. The same with Andrew Robertson from Hull. He'd been relegated. The same about Gini Wijnaldum from Newcastle, had been relegated. We weren't really that excited about the signing. Yeah. Shaqiri, only recently, Liverpool fans were a little bit like, meh, why?
even Mo Salah.
Mo Salah, even to a certain extent, yeah. Mo Salah.
But you knew that he can do it on a rainy Tuesday in Stoke because he played. why weren't you excited?
Of course. But one of the funny stories about Mo Salah is actually that it wasn't a Jurgen Klopp signing, it was a Michael Edwards signing. So Michael Edwards and his team had said to Jurgen Klopp, Mo Salah, have a look at him. And Klopp was skeptical. Yeah, he quite liked the look of him, but he wasn't really sure. Yeah. Mo Salah had played for Chelsea before, it hadn't really worked out, but Michael Edwards was sure he wanted to go for it. Klopp trusted him, and you know, Salah's scoring over 40 goals in his first season, wins everything he can in terms of personal accolades. So.
And the word trust is the key thing, which Craig mentioned, and it's part of the line, the sort of conjoined thinking that I was talking about before, is that at the club previously, even within the sort of the doors of the boardroom and to the manager's office, the trust didn't seem like it was there, and that conjoined thinking didn't seem like it was there, but now that trust is very much there between the fans and the boardroom, and everybody, it all seems to be like everyone's pushing in the same direction now.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's only good for the club.
Okay. So looking back, we see a lot of good transfers. We see a cooperation that we didn't see before. And it seems like everything turned out to gold under the hands of Jurgen Klopp. But in the first place, he had to work with the things he had at stake. When was the first time you thought, oh, we might be onto something special here?
I think Jurgen Klopp's first sort of 3 or 4 months at the club were very up and down. Liverpool fans, Jurgen Klopp was a massive name for Liverpool fans to come in as manager, especially after having Brendan Rodgers. And so we were excited and we thought that we would hit the ground running from the beginning, that we'd be winning games, that we'd be challenging straight away.
When came he over? When was it exactly?
It was October 2015. Yeah. And of course, that was never going to be the case because we had a pretty poor squad. We had a lot of players that wouldn't fit with the way Jurgen Klopp wants to play. And so we did have to work with what we had. I think the first time where we all kind of realised what we had, I'd like to say the Dortmund game where we beat them in the last minute, but it probably wasn't that. It was probably when we played Manchester United in the Europa League in the round before, where we beat them 2-0 at home, and then we went to Old Trafford for the second leg, and Manchester United go 1-0 up. And in the past, Liverpool would have folded. Manchester United would have gone on to beat them. And Philip Coutinho scores 2 minutes before halftime. which settles the tie pretty much. And that was a joyous occasion for Liverpool fans, because we got to dance in Old Trafford for half the match, knowing we were going through flares and everything. And I think that was the moment that we realised that we, you know, whether we were to win lots of trophies with Jurgen Klopp or not, we were going to have lots of fun, which is something that Liverpool fans haven't had in a while. And that is something that we have had. You know, we've been beaten in 3 finals now by Jurgen Klopp, which is people in Germany will know that he likes to get beat in finals, and that's happened. But as football fans, we've enjoyed some of the best nights of our lives watching this Liverpool side and celebrating the wins afterwards.
I can guarantee you, if he wins a final, it will be a 5-2 against Bayern. So then it will be a great festivity.
That's if Bayern get there anyway.
So, my listeners and me, we know what Jürgen Klopp did at Mainz and what he did at Borussia Dortmund. But how would you describe his style of play at the beginning in Liverpool and how it has evolved since then?
I think when he started off at Liverpool, and Craig mentioned it there, it was all sort of built around excitement. It was, he'd come in and described it as heavy metal football, and it was rock and roll, and it was all out attack. And Liverpool was sort of a bit bottomless. They didn't really have much of a defence or a spine which could sustain this as being a trophy winning sort of blueprint. And what has changed, I suppose, is that Jurgen Klopp has been able to buy players and go out and spend the money on players, which have allowed him to establish that backbone and make sure they have a sort of, I don't know what you call it in German, like an iron fist inside a velvet glove. So you got the lovely interplay of the front three between Salah, Mane and Firmino, but then at the back now for Liverpool, there's a real sort of steeliness, and it's something that we've probably not had at Liverpool since the Rafa Benitez days. It's always been that Liverpool were a bit shaky at the back, but then there was obviously times where we weren't so good coming forward either, which was the problem. But then under Rodgers, we had similar problems where really good going forward with Sterling, Suarez and Sturridge, not so good at the back. So Klopp, I think, has sort of moved away from what he thought was just going to be this, and maybe he didn't. Maybe he had the blueprint right from the start. It's sort of hard to say because he tried to manage with what he had, as we've said. But it felt at the time like he was just going for excitement and wanted to almost win us back round. And now we're at the point where we've got that foundation. We've had all our fun almost, and now it's time to get a bit serious, I suppose.
I think there's definitely been different phases. So, like Josh said in the beginning, we just weren't a good enough team to do what he wanted. It was what he was getting from the side was, you know, it was the stamina, it was the work rate that you'd come to expect, but it wasn't necessarily the quality. Yeah. And then in his second season, I think he learned a lot in terms of English football. I think he learned that it's very difficult to play in the way that he wants to play every single game without a winter break. So
yeah,
where Dortmund would have had... is it a month?
Not quite a month, but a few weeks off
at Christmas. You don't get that in England. There's only more games at Christmas. And so his second season, Liverpool were working towards qualifying for the Champions League. And with the last 8 to 10 games, it was very much, it was 1-0s, and it was just about getting over the line because Liverpool had run themselves to the ground. Last season, it was, he'd learnt that he had to rotate and he needed a slightly bigger squad, and we saw lots of rotation. We saw rotation in the derby against Everton. Fans weren't happy. We saw him just, you know, Firmino would be on the bench and everyone would be like, why is Firmino on the bench? But it was Jurgen Klopp rotating, and that seemed to work well up until the final. The Champions League final happens, and that's, you know, we were unlucky because of Salah. We had a goalkeeper that does what he does, and you can't, you know, you can prepare for a Champions League final, but you can't prepare for that. And I think this season...
And how much is a topic that Loris Karius got hit in the head before he had his...
Well, practice? It was a massive topic afterwards, but I just don't get it. I don't agree with it. Yeah, it's an excuse.
It's his diagnosis. Yeah.
The problem with Loris Karius was Loris Karius wasn't a good enough goalkeeper anyway. And he had made quite a few mistakes, and he'd been in and out of the team. He'd been dropped because of his mistakes, and then he got back into the side. He played for 4 to 5 months pretty well, and then the Champions League happens, and I think that, you know, that can't be put down to concussion, because it's an excuse, and Real Madrid beat us, and that happens, and we've all had to get over that. But I think the most exciting thing about that final was that with any other manager and with any other Liverpool side I can remember, if you were beaten in the Champions League final, it would feel like the worst feeling in the world. But actually, at the end of that match, we were disappointed, but it felt like it was the beginning of something. It felt like we were now watching a Liverpool side that could compete with the best, and that with a few signings, and Naby Keita, and Alisson, and so on, that we would be able to push on and finally win the league, that's what we've been waiting 28 years for.
Yeah, we talked about it. You would change everything. You would swap everything just for this one league title. So take us on the journey through this season, Josh. How did it start? How did it came to the first loss in January, which is just crazy to think about?
Well, to be honest, and it's very strange when you look at the sort of the points on the board and the results that Liverpool have got throughout the season. It's almost feels like it's been a bit of a roller coaster, because it started off in quite an underwhelming fashion, really. It was Klopp trying to sort of find his feet in this new style, and he'd signed quite a few new players in the summer, and they were still trying to find their feet as well. And a couple of players from last season who were figuring out a bit of a new system to the way Liverpool were going to play. And Liverpool were just sort of getting over the line. It was almost similar to the performances Craig described in previous seasons, towards the back end of the season, where it felt like Liverpool were just managing to get the results, but the performances weren't quite there, almost like the team weren't really capable of it. And there was a lot of fans who were quite concerned, thinking it's either going to click and Liverpool are going to sort of ignite and go on this magnificent run, or it could go completely the other way, and then we could go out in really disappointing fashion. And it came to about Christmas time, about December time. And to be honest, I think the turning point was we played Everton at home.
Yeah.
And the whole game, Everton had given us a really good game.
Tell the story again, because I know you want to tell it.
I want to describe it in some detail. Everton brought probably the best team they've brought to Anfield in my lifetime, and gave Liverpool a really good game. Went toe-to-toe with them. Marco Silva changed his style almost wholeheartedly to deal with what the threat of Liverpool was. And then in the 97th, 96th minute, as we all know, the ball goes up the field, Trent Alexander-Arnold crosses it, Van Dijk slices a shot high into the sky. And I think if you'd have said at that moment the position Liverpool would be in now, everyone would have told you you're a complete liar, because the Everton fans were honestly cheering so much when Van Dijk hit that shot. But then all of a sudden, it just loops back down and Jordan Pickford tries to catch it and he hits it off the bar, and then Divock Origi's there, and it's almost the perfect comeback story for him as well, who was a player who was completely outcasted. But it seemed to give Liverpool so much life. It was like, I remember going out onto the streets of Anfield after the game, and it was like being at a party. It was like being at, you know, carnival in London or some sort of street festival, where everyone just thought this Liverpool team is about to do something. And it wasn't even necessarily that everyone thought we were about to ignite. It was just that we knew that this Liverpool team were now so serious about winning this title, and we could just grind out the results. It was a side of us we knew we had, and people were prepared to wait for the sort of more the side which, you know, sets on fire and is heavy metal. But luckily for Liverpool, that sort of came a few weeks later, didn't it?
I think it's important to let everyone in Germany know that when Liverpool did score that goal, just before they scored that goal against Everton, as Van Dijk slices the ball up into the air, the whole stadium lets out this, because we were annoyed that sliced it. But as the ball is in the air, Everton fans let off pyro, because blue pyro, because they thought that they'd got the draw and this was them celebrating. So at that moment, they threw blue pyro onto the pitch in celebration. But little did they know that the ball was going to come down, and it was going to be the goalkeeper
oh,
would
man,
do that, and it would go
this
in
more than I anticipated.
So when Liverpool are celebrating and Jurgen Klopp runs onto the pitch, there is blue pyro on the pitch, and that's because the Everton fans thought that they had got a draw. So that's important for everyone to know. That's the mentality.
I think
of
it was more important for you to tell the story again. I appreciate it. It's okay. It's your rival.
But definitely the Christmas period has been the changing point, and it feels crazy to look back on the beginning of the season, because we've been unbeaten until we got beaten by Man City. That the first sort of 2-3 months of the season, there was a lot of discussion in England around when Liverpool would actually play well, because they were picking
the
up points.
The results were okay.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily playing in the same way that we'd seen them play last year. And I think over Christmas, that was the time that we saw that begin to happen. We beat Man United, we beat Arsenal. You know, we go on this win streak, and it wasn't to be against Man City. We were 11 millimeters or 1.1 centimeters away from going 1-0 up.
Do you know what is the error of the margin of error for the goal line technology? Isn't it around 15 millimeters? I didn't do research.
Why have you told
it,
us?
I thought you might not, because everybody should have Googled this. But I know that in 2015 or 2016, something around that, the FIFA or the UEFA, one of those two, I think it was the FIFA, set down the margin of error from 30 millimeters, which is insane if you ask me, to 15 millimeters. And that was when the German Football League decided, okay, if we have a margin of error that small, then we can discuss to introduce goal line technology to Germany as well.
Thank you for telling me that.
I'm really sorry. It's
made me feel quite sorry.
Like letting out the air of a balloon. I thought you would talk about this all the time.
We came so close, and obviously it then is hit off the goalkeeper and goes through Salah's legs, and all sorts of things happen in that game that means
it shouldn't be. It felt like it shouldn't be on this night, as some games before felt like it should be. Everton and some other. Yeah. I mean, the matches in the first few weeks of the season, it all the time it looked like City had just kept on doing the things they had done in the season before without Kevin De Bruyne, who was injured. And all you was waiting for was when would Chelsea and Liverpool start to lose points and there would be a gap. Now we had this big gap between Liverpool and City because they had those two matches which didn't run very well for them.
two of the best nights of my Christmas, I must say, when they lost to Leicester and Crystal Palace. But the City game was you can take the disappointment out of it, and you can say, you know, that you're disheartened by losing and the fact that we didn't go 10 points clear. But the fact of the matter is that Manchester City almost completely altered their style to sort of suit what they felt would be able to play better against Liverpool, and that in itself is quite a sort of sign of progress for Liverpool, because this is a Liverpool side that embarrassed Manchester City, quite frankly, in 2018 with the game in the Premier League at Anfield, where the scoreline flattered them with the 4-3, the game in the Champions League at Anfield where we just absolutely played them off the park, and then even the game at the Etihad where the only discussions going into the game were that City might not qualify, not that they might not win the game, and for Liverpool to go and win the game 2-1 away from home was just absolutely, it was unheard of. So
with a little bit of luck with the one
a little bit of luck, but you need it. You need it in these situations. City had it in the game just recently, so you need luck in them situations. But it is a sign of truly how far Liverpool have come, that Klopp and Guardiola now, and I sort of know this from speaking to you yesterday, Max, is that they've established again this Dortmund-Bayern thing where Bayern were probably struggling against Dortmund for a while until they got Guardiola, and then it started to tip the balance. But it's just this constant battle between these two who are probably the best managers in the world, probably got the best tactical blueprints in the world, and we're starting to see it again now, and it's given the Premier League a whole different dimension. It's so exciting to be a sort of neutral fan in the Premier League, I think.
I think it's very interesting when you read Raphael Honigstein's book about
Bring
Klopp.
The Noise.
Yeah, Bring the Noise, and you see how many parallels there are between Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp's Dortmund, because you're seeing this Guardiola versus Klopp, sort of Guardiola with the riches of Bayern Munich and Manchester City, and Manchester City being the rich oligarch, and Liverpool being the, you know, the upstarts.
Don't say poor, please.
No, not poor, because, you know, compared to the rest of Europe, we are rich.
Resourceful.
We are rich, but in terms of the Premier League, we're, you know, we're probably seen as the, you know, the upstarts, really. And so there's that sort of, you know, the fact that Klopp lost a few finals, including a Champions League final with us. He did the same with Dortmund. I think the one thing that I take from that book is that Jurgen Klopp won his first league title with Borussia Dortmund in his third season. And this is Klopp's third full season. So
yeah, you're taking away what you want.
I'm hoping.
To take away. Okay, that's. I'm totally fine with that, and I know that this is a big dream, and it would be a wonderful story that only football is able to write, as we say it here at the Rasenfunk. But now the gap has shrunk to Manchester City. How big is your fear that it slips away again, the title? I'm sorry to bring this close to midnight.
I would not have come on the podcast if I was going to ask me this.
Yesterday I was a nice guy.
To be honest, for me, it's a Liverpool team who, perhaps in years gone by, and we've discussed there, you probably wouldn't trust them to keep hold of this 4-point lead. But it's a Liverpool team now who, sort of, you would trust much more to keep a 4-point lead. I mean, 4 points still means that over the course of the season, Liverpool have to lose 2 more games than Manchester City. This is Liverpool who have not dropped a point to anyone outside the top 6 yet, when Manchester City and all below them have. It's a Liverpool side whose only loss of the season is now away to Manchester City. Apart from that, there's only 3 draws against teams, 2 of them away in the top 6 and 1 of them at home to Manchester City. It's a completely different Liverpool team we're watching now to the ones in previous years, and that trust is really there from fans. And I think if you'd have said to a lot of fans, when I talk about that Van Dijk slice shot into the air, if you'd have said to them at that point that we'd be four points clear of Manchester City at this point, then they'd have absolutely taken it, because from this point, you'd have thought back then, and there might be some fans who've gone a bit more negative now since the loss, and I think that's bound to happen when you do finally lose a game after such a long unbeaten run. You just think that this is a Liverpool team now who are capable of holding on to this, and also capable of hopefully challenging on other fronts during that time as well.
I can say this on a podcast, because I know that nobody in England will hear me say this, but I...
You won't retweet this episode. I will shut down all the stuff.
There is still a big part of me that that will worry about what can happen, because there's been... And look, Josh can shake his head, and I will say this first.
I was violently shaking my head.
To know, yeah.
No, I will say this first before I say the next part, but there is a thing within me that will always believe, when it comes to the league title and Liverpool winning the league title, that eventually Liverpool won't win the league title, because I have no idea what it's like and what it would feel like, and I just don't... I have no idea. I can't... within my brain, I can't sort of work it out. It just doesn't. It doesn't feel like a thing that can be real to me, because as a Liverpool fan, we've never won that. We've won everything else in my lifetime.
How many years is it since
28? So for what is the second most successful side in England in terms of league titles, for it to be 28 years is ridiculous. And so there is that part of me that worries, but I do think we're going to win it this year, and I think that the reason why Liverpool have been in 2 title races in my lifetime. One was in 13-14 when Gerrard slips right at the end, and one was in 2008-2009 where Liverpool are beaten to the title by Manchester United. The difference with both of those was that in January, both those years, Liverpool were second and they didn't look as if they were going to win the league. I think actually in 2013, they might have been third. At both those stages, Liverpool weren't deemed to be in a title race. It was momentum, and it was a winning streak coming up to the end of the season that forced their way into a title race. And
Now they are the rabbit that the front is chasing.
They've got themselves into a position whereby... you know, that they're at the top. And in terms of England, there is no team in England and no club in England that does momentum better than Liverpool. And, you know, last year in the Champions League, When we play Manchester City, we beat them at home. And you know, you might have seen the scenes where the bus comes through and there's pyro and all of that. And then we bring Roma to Anfield, and there's the momentum and there's the crowd and there's the atmosphere and everyone's excited, and Liverpool win, and then we go to Roma, and that's momentum, and it's momentum that builds. And Liverpool are a club that is really good at that. They're really good at harnessing that. And
I think club too.
And Jurgen Klopp is at the forefront of that. And if Liverpool can get to March and they're still top of the league, then I fully believe that they will do it.
Okay, so we're a little bit ahead of our time. I didn't tell you that this is kind of the signature move of this podcast, but a few more minutes and then I will let you sleep and won't ask you what about German fan culture you like. This discussion we had in private. Maybe we'll repeat it on the show, but remotely. Yeah. Or when you come to Munich in March, which is kind of the point. What do you expect out of the Champions League, which went kind of different if I look that you lost all your away games in the group stage, at the group stage. Now you got drawn FC Bayern. Josh, what do you expect out of this game, and how much impact can it have on this?
It's hard to say because I think from my perspective, I've not really seen Bayern Munich play this season. I can make assumptions based on where they are in the Bundesliga, which would be sort of baseless, to be honest. It would only be based on what I've seen from the league and bits I've seen from Borussia Dortmund, because they're the only Bundesliga team I've watched this season. Out of the two of them, so it'd be quite hard for me to say what I'm expecting from the game in terms of the impact it can have on the season. I imagine if Liverpool win at the Allianz, and then all of a sudden that thing about them not winning an away game in Europe all season will be gone. I remember having the conversation with you yesterday where one of the things you were clinging to was that we were playing
one
at Anfield.
One of the only things I was referring to positively.
One of the only things that Max was clinging to was that we were playing at Anfield first, but then we politely reminded him just an hour after he mentioned it that that Liverpool won their quarter and semi-finals at Anfield last season by battering the opposition team, and then we're able to, well, go to the Etihad and win the game, as we mentioned before, but then go to Roma and just about sort of see it through by the skin of our teeth.
You got it sorted out in the first leg.
We're a team who are capable of seeing it through in the first leg. But I think also now this Liverpool team is almost different to the one we saw last season because of the dimension that Alisson's added, and players like Fabinho and Naby Keita who are starting to find their feet as well. It's a team who, I believe, can now go to European away grounds, different to even in the group stage, because it's going to be sort of so many months and weeks advance from that, and can get results on the continent because of that sort of solid backbone that I talked about we'd established before.
Yeah, I feel as if we've eulogized over this Liverpool side, and
that's exactly what I came on here to do, Chris.
I just don't want people to think that Liverpool fans are arrogant, because we're certainly not that. I think we're excited and we're enjoying our football for the first time in years, and we're enjoying going to the football and everything around the football, and we're excited to be able to go to Munich for a few days and have, you know, drink all your beer and just have a brilliant time and visit the Allianz, because for a lot of Liverpool fans, we haven't been able to do that. Some people did in the pre-season friendly, but for most, it's our first time at that stadium. And to play a team like Bayern Munich, who have won the European Cup five times like us, it feels like it's a proper big European tie. It feels like it's Europeans elite against each other, and that's exciting. And I think it's the tie of the round.
So you didn't do any research on Bayern yet?
No, I was going to say was that's Bayern Munich, the name that within our heads we think we're about to play. And I haven't watched enough of Bayern Munich to be able to say whether we'll definitely beat them, whether we won't, but I definitely think that Liverpool are the side that every team didn't want, and I think that's why we should feel confident going into the game. Look, anything can happen in these games.
And it's some weeks away. We don't know what will happen,
exactly.
But both teams will have to live up to their best to be able to compete in these games, and maybe Bayern a little more because their highest level isn't the highest level of Liverpool at the moment we are recording this. So there should be some circumstances that lower the level of Liverpool and will set the highest bar for Bayern Munich's level, and then they could meet each other at eye perspective, and then anything could happen. But it's football, you never know. But what does the Champions League mean to you after all? I mean, you went to the final, you had this wonderful, magnificent win over Milan, 2005, I guess.
Yep.
Everybody remembers this. It's part of football history, as the 99 final is also, but under much more hurting circumstances for most.
I don't remember. It's fine.
Ah, that's
I
nice.
I do.
Yeah. So you're so young that you really don't remember. That's really nice of you. But so you were that close in the last year, and now you're on a good run again with some wobbly times in the group stage, but who cares if you go through to the elimination round and then you win all the things. But you also have this title race. And for you, the fans, this is so much more important than this dumb Champions League title, which you won already 5 times. Oh, who hasn't?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think when we were going towards the final last season, Liverpool and the Champions League were almost seen as these two things that they're almost compatible. It's like the Champions League is as decorated, or the European Cup as it was before, as decorated Liverpool's history, you know, winning it 5 times. And Bob Paisley, one of our greatest managers ever, he's considered that way because it was 3 European Cups he won, I think, during his time. It's sort of written into the folklore of Liverpool that Liverpool and the Champions League and the European Cup are as one. And I think you saw a lot of that last season, that it came back out in Liverpool, that sort of enjoyment of being back on Europe's biggest stage. And I think you'll see it in the knockout stages this season. And I genuinely hope that Jurgen Klopp is following up on his word of what he said this season, is that he's built a team which he thinks can challenge on several fronts. Because I don't really want to give up on one to get the other. I'd quite like to think that we can go for the league, and
so
also
go for the double, for the
necessarily, but it's to be able to go as far as we can in both things and mount a serious challenge and prove that we are the serious team that everyone is now talking us up to be. Because Craig mentions there that it ended sort of so tragically last year with the final against Madrid, but it felt like the beginning, and I think now Liverpool have built that foundation with what they did last season, that this season is now the time to take that real opportunity, because Liverpool might not get the chance to challenge for the league again like they are this season. You know, God forbid, I cross my heart that doesn't happen, but Liverpool might not get this chance again, where City, you know, slip up the way they have so far. Yeah. Where Chelsea and Tottenham aren't competing as probably as hard as they might do in future. Manchester United might start to pick up again, although this current manager is not what everyone's cracking him up to be. As long as that is the current manager at the time this gets published. But no, like I do genuinely hope that Liverpool can go as far as possible in both competitions. And the main thing is that we sort of enjoy it throughout. And you know, I'm confident that if both those things happen, then we'll be lifting something.
Yeah, but you do know that you sound exactly like a football coach at this stage. I'm confident that we can compete in both, and we will reach.
I'm confident we can win the Premier League. That's different to the Champions League. The Champions League is such a... There's so many variables which go into it. I mean, we could draw Juventus next round, in which case, if I was sat doing this podcast at that point, I'd be saying totally different things, because I think Juventus were probably... be too strong for us over 2 legs. So I think I'm confident we can win the league. I'm confident we can go far in the Champions League, and I think that most of the talk so far has been you have to focus on one and then ditch the other. But I think you can we've got a squad and a team now who can challenge on both fronts for as far as we can go.
I want to win the Premier League, and that's all I want. And we won it in 2005, and I was too young to go to the match. And I was lucky enough to go to the Champions League final last year. Obviously, we didn't win it, but I think the thing that we've all wanted for so long is possible this season. And look, I still think that we can go through against Bayern. I still think that, you know, we could, you know, depend on who we draw in the next round, we could go even further. But I would just hate for that to hinder our league campaign, and that feels really, it feels really stupid, and it feels really horrible to say, because for years and years we were watching, you know, Bayern Munich and Man United and all Chelsea and all of these teams in the Champions League, where we weren't getting anywhere near it under Roy Hodgson and under Kenny Dalglish for how many years? Eight, nine years. So now that we're back in it, I want us to compete, and I would love nothing more than to win the Champions League. But the thing that Liverpool fans have waited so long for is the league title, and you know, that will sound silly to fans of Bayern Munich, of maybe even Borussia Dortmund, who, you know, who have won it recently. But for us, it's been 28 years, and that's been, you know, two generations of football fan. It's been my whole lifetime, and we've never seen our team lift that. And I think that the minute that Liverpool Football Club lifts the Premier League, that's the moment where there is a monkey off our back, and that we can get on with our lives, and we can stop obsessing over it, and we can stop because, you know, that's a lot of Liverpool's problems stem from the fact that they haven't won it in so long, while our rivals are winning it. And I think that once we can win that, then the pressure will be alleviated, and we can finally get on with our lives. And
the entrance to the Garden of Eden, peaceful, and every fruit is reachable. And Jürgen Klopp will be—he's kind of a hero right now, but then he will be a legend.
He'll be certified with our greatest managers of all time. And I think in terms of his impact off the pitch already, he's sort of done enough to be eulogised by most Liverpool fans. But without that trophy, which he doesn't have yet, it's not necessarily going to happen until he does get it. And if it happens to be the league title is the one he gets, then it's the biggest of all.
Jurgen Klopp knows that all he has to do as Liverpool manager is win that league. And if he wins that league, then he will be a god to Liverpool fans. And you know, he could win that league and not win anything for the 3 years after it, and I wouldn't care. I wouldn't give a shit, because I just want to win
that.
I will
remind you. You just said this is the beginning of the okay. So we will look what will happen. I could talk with you for hours, although we did this already yesterday. I would love to talk with you again about your visit at Fortuna Düsseldorf versus Augsburg, about ticketing prices, about all you know about 50 plus one. It's really fascinating to talk with somebody who is so deep into fan culture and also German foreign culture. But I guess you have to grab some sleep now, because it was a long day and it will be a long day again tomorrow, when Liverpool maybe will win its first title of 2019, the Junior Cup. Not sure about that.
The first of three.
Your world in Jürgen Klopp's ears, who will by then be a god. So this saying will finish up. Well, I thank you very much. Guys out there, follow the Anfield Rap. They do amazing stuff. Follow those two young guys. The first of them, Josh Sexton, at Twitter. He's jsexton24, jsexton, sexton24. And Craig Hennen, who is c_Hennen with double N7. So c_hannan. Please follow those two guys. It was an amazing time to talk with you again. I wish you all the best for the league. And all the rest we will see, and we meet each other at Munich again. And maybe we will have time for a podcast then again. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you, all your listeners out there. Excuse my shitty English. I made some bad, bad grammar mistakes. But it's late, and this is me speaking English. Next time on German again, and until we hear us then, have a good time. Make it well. Ciao.